Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Hello!
It doesn't matter! What?
Oh, Blames. Oh, Jeremy rocked me. He rocked me in so many ways. Oh, it was good. My name is Jasper William Cartwright, and I am joined today by
Jeremy Cobb. But Ganonbort, oh, I miss Ganonbort. Ganonbort calls me Scaramy.
Scaramy. Have we not had Scaramy?
I feel weirdly, like... I don't think we have. Let me check. I don't think we have, though.
If we haven't had Scaramy, that feels I feel like I've heard someone say Scaramy before.
This is the first Scaramy we've had.
This is the first Scaramy. Wow. Okay.
It sounds like a missed opportunity now.
Yeah.
It definitely does.
It's like when you find those fossils just lying on the ground.
Yeah.
Like,
do you know what it was? I think everyone was focusing on the cob region for their fossils. You know what I mean? And that was really where everyone was putting their energy into the cob. And maybe we've neglected the Jeremy for too long. Yes. That's what it is. Well, you may have heard, wonderful audience, that we have an extra special guest with us here today. I would say a long-standing friend of the pod, and someone who we definitely need to have on for a long, 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 long time. He's a incredible photographer. He refused to. He wanted me to say like middling or
decent.
Kind of like
decent is better
I think
than
was the word.
Decent is better than middling.
Decent is better.
Decent
than
is like
middling.
A six out of ten. I feel six.
Well,
to seven.
I refuse to use either of those. An incredible photographer, a brilliant voice actor, and an amazing writer, and all-around nice guy. It's KP!
Oh my god!
This is the wrong dungeon and the wrong dragon.
Full Prince vibe? Woof!
This makes them even more black!
Cake glitches and pitches.
And lands in the cusp of a teaspoon.
Oh, no!
On a nap.
No!
You think this is just a game?
That's disgusting and I love it.
Yeah! We're about to get into something real big now.
Oh my goodness, I've just been elevated well beyond my position. And it's very lofty up here and a little drafty.
Yeah.
We've been contacting the landlord for years trying to get this draft taken care of.
Truly.
Unfortunately, the landlord is an eldritch being and does not respond kindly to any of our requests.
Jamal doesn't have emails, so it's been hard to get hold of. But KP, how are you doing? How are you doing today?
I'm doing fantastic, and I'm doing even better knowing that I get this opportunity to chat with you guys. I've been... I'm not going to lie, I have not had the opportunity to properly listen to you guys. Like, I've seen clips, I've heard from you, and I just am a huge fan of each of you guys individually and what you guys do. But it's one of those things where I'm just like, I wish one day I'll be good enough that I can be on their podcast and be with them and have an opportunity to chat with them. Because honestly, I think you guys are super cool, and all the things you guys do is super cool. And to be here with all of you and just to nerd out and chat and, you know, hang out. It's a huge
That's
privilege.
What we do. That,
yeah.
That is what we do.
Thank you.
Well, we appreciate you saying that's very, very kind of you.
Yeah.
And Very few people have ever called us cool.
I'm actually very curious about this. I was thinking about this earlier today. I really want to sit down with a lot of TTRPG people, especially the ones who to me seem cool and I think are widely considered cool, and see, were they cool in high school? Like, did people at large consider them cool? Because people at large should not consider me cool.
No, not me.
I feel like I can confidently say there's like a few who were cool. Mm-hmm. You know, like there's like a couple that are cool, but I can't think there's a lot that were cool.
We are all cut from the same cloth, I feel. We're so, like, we come from the same dorkish cloth the nerdy cloth of wanting to be a little extra, loving something a little too much that people didn't quite understand, a little out there, not quite knowing how to be social around other people unless we are in that same niche group of people around us. I know for a fact I certainly was not cool. I thought I was kind of cool. I thought I had a great group of friends. I did have great groups of friends, but I definitely was not like the popular kid in school of any sort. I think, especially, I don't think I really even started coming onto my own, but I don't think I really, you know, understood myself and how to interact with people until, like, I want to say like junior year, not even junior years, senior year of high school. Like, I literally had a moment. You ever have those memories that you sometimes, they just pop up in your head and you just go, why the hell was I like that? Yeah. Why was I?
Oh, yeah. What? All the time.
And it's just like, you get this shame.
I do that now.
Yeah, exactly.
I do that now.
It's psychic damage. It's delayed psychic damage just showing up. The DM's like, hey, rolls 2d6 and you're just like, oh, out of nowhere.
Why did I say that?
Like, there's this one interaction. It just haunts me to this day of, KP, you're so stupid. You're such a, like, why were you that weird, social, awkward kid? Like, how did you even think this was acceptable? And that was in freshman year of high school. I remember I was in leadership class, and this older, I think he was a junior or senior, he was a, you know, very handsome football player, like, definitely a popular kid, but also a really nice guy, right? He really genuinely, like, he was, like, a good person, right?
Yeah.
And at least from what I remember, and the class had us all, like, a senior or junior match up with a freshman so that they had, like, a buddy or a mentor to help walk them through the high school experience and stuff. And so this guy was my mentor, and he was very kind. He took me under his wing, and so I think I just became too familiar. I don't know why I thought this was a cool thing to do. Walked up to him, and I thought it'd be we're friends, haha thing, and I kicked him in the shit.
Oh no!
What?
Oh,
why?
No.
I don't know. I thought that was socially acceptable.
Yeah. I'm with you. Like, just not genuinely not meaning it. Yeah, I have a story. Actually, should we make this the lore drop? By the way,
yeah, we're just telling this should be the lore drop for sure.
I don't think I ever shared that too. Like, I don't know why I never shared it, but yeah, I never had.
Okay, that's the lore dump, which means we can no longer. We're officially embargoed from asking KP any more questions about that particular subject.
I have one because you saying that where I'm just like, I look at myself, I'm like, dude. Like, I understand what I was thinking, but I was so wrong.
Yeah.
This reflects so poorly on past me in so many ways. But there was, so at church, I grew up going to church all the time. And
foot. We were like, we're in church. Okay.
Whoa. Yeah, we're in church.
Okay. There's a lot of ways this could go wrong already.
You know, not any of the normal ways that you would expect somebody to go wrong in church. So there was this girl in the youth group with me. I was like maybe 14 at the time. That
freshman in high school. There it is.
I, especially back then, had like I found it very strange. I found tanning to be a very strange activity.
Still is.
Like, it didn't make sense to me.
Still doesn't.
Because I was just like, it's, why are you giving yourself like sun damage to try and look more like me?
Yeah.
Just like, embrace the way that you look. You look fine. Why do you do that? And
seems logical to me, even to this day.
I went, so I went up to this... to this poor girl, and I have to off the bat give all the credit. She took it like a champ. But I went up and I was like, "Yo, why do you always tan and stuff? You're so pretty. You look horrible."
You look to this horrible?
Day. To this day, thinking of that, I'm like, bro. That is horrendous. Why
that
did
is,
you say that?
Because
I didn't mean it. I don't know how to explain it. I genuinely did not mean it in a way that was to be hurtful.
Yeah, yeah.
But there was such a disconnect.
There was such a disconnect between
everything I said and how I said it and what I intended the effect to be that it is mind-boggling to me. to this day.
Like, outside of something that's just like actively like an offensive phrase, I don't know there's even a much worse word that you could have picked.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, horrible is like truly like that. Like, that would, I don't know how I would take that if a 14-year-old came up to me.
She took it so well.
I was like, we can't ask follow-up questions, but my gosh,
I will say this. My youth pastor was also standing there at the time, and he was like, Jeremy, what? Like, so horrified. And that was the only indication that I was like, oh, wait, was that not the good thing to say? Like, I truly did not understand
years. It's like, it's definitely like a common thing, I think, especially for like younger people to get the kind of like double, like the false, like false positive thing, mm-hmm. and like seeing it very earnestly as like a, oh, I'm giving you a compliment. But it's just like, but I don't think kids truly do not understand the backhanded nature of said compliments. You know what I mean? Where it's just like, you know, it's like,
There's no filter.
Yeah, there's no filter
there, or at least it hasn't been properly established yet, and it just comes across as, ooh, like some of the kids, like young kids say, my goodness, and you just sit there going, oh God, that's hurtful. Mm-hmm. That is so hurtful, but you're so tiny and cute, I can't do anything about this right now.
Yeah, I watched a video online of this young girl. Her mum was like trying on this like black dress that she'd got, and she was like looking really happy with herself, and the daughter, like the mum, you can see like she's feeling herself, she's like, oh wow, look, this new dress I've got on, you know, and the girl comes up to her and just goes, mum, are you pregnant again? And the mum's like, immediately you just see her shoulders like just deflate. She's like, no, sweetie, I'm not. And goes, and then the daughter just grabs her belly and goes, but it looks like it, and tries to shake the belly, and it's just like, it's like, I really felt like quite like, I was like,
it's those moments you're just like, I wish you were immune to any sort of damage so I can just punch you like a football right now.
No. I think it's even, the wish for me goes even beyond that. The wish for me is, I wish you were a completely random stranger that just said that, so that I could just, do you know what I mean? So that I could just scream at you, like, and it would be fine. Oh. But the fact that you're my child, you know, if anything, this just reflects poorly on me.
Right, exactly.
Like, some comments that I've made to other people.
Yeah, it's, I think what it is like, at least for me, I think it takes a while for human beings to start modeling mm-hmm. other people's minds.
Yeah.
Like an understanding that like, oh, when I do this, it actually comes across to the person like this.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like mm-hmm. when I was a child, I used to bite people like very small. I like one or two. And I didn't know that it was like a painful thing until my mom bit me back. And then I never bit anybody again because I understood like, oh, it's bad. Because I bit her and then she just bit me. And I was like,
That's some solid parenting
That is solid. That is solid POC parenting right there. Us three understand. We know that nothing against my white brethren and sisters, but y'all don't understand.
But they'd be horrified.
They'd be horrified. Yeah. I can't imagine anybody else outside of our group heard that going, child abuse. And I'm just like, bro, just relax. It's all good. This is normal.
It's normal.
Yeah. It was not like I was bleeding at the
end. Yeah, no, but yeah, exactly.
Exactly. One teachable
moment,
you'll
never do it again.
Yeah.
Exactly. And you know what? And Jeremy only has a small chunk.
Yeah.
I was literally going to make the same joke. Okay, I've got mine. My high school related, absolutely mega cringe. So, bear in mind that I went to an all boys high school, so a secondary school in the UK, and then you basically go to a different school for the final 2 years of high school in the UK. So junior and senior year are like a different school. And so I went to an all boys high school and then a mixed junior and senior. And basically I went in, and it was the first time I had been around girls in like a school environment ever. Since I was like, I don't know, young enough to like not really care about girls, right? And I really got it in my head that I wanted to, you know, I was like, I want to try and, you know, do more, be more, you know, attractive, whatever. And like, you know, what do girls find attractive? And this girl that I really, really fancied, she really liked like emo dudes. and like, yeah, you already know where this is going.
Does this work when you had an afro? I can't ask any follow-up questions.
This is back when I had a very, very, very big afro. It was literally past my shoulders. Oh. My afro was that big.
Yeah, so impressively sized.
It was a really, really big afro. And
I'm missing the connection between that and emo, though.
Well, I have an idea of where this might go. I may be wrong, but I have a suspicion.
So one morning, I decided to use my mother's straighteners.
Yep.
Wait for it to straighten just the front part of my afro to give myself an emo fringe over my left eye, I think. But wait for it. And this is the last part of the story. My Nikki, if you're out there, I love you so fucking dearly. I can't express. Nikki is she was one of my black sisters at college, and she basically saw me from as I was walking into college, saw me from like a while away, took off in a full fucking knees up sprint, and was just like, "You toilet now!" And she just threw me into the because I'd like gelled it down. It wasn't gonna stay down. Like it was just stood up. I just kind of gave myself a vaguely K-pop hairstyle for a moment.
Very anime hairstyle there.
Yeah,
just very anime hairstyle.
Straight hair.
And so I had to gel it down. And so she literally threw me into a cubicle, and we just sat there just rinsing my head for about half an hour. But she was like, "Sweetheart, I understand why you're doing this, but this isn't it."
Bless her. You had a guardian angel. My goodness.
I really did.
Absolutely.
Thinking back to it and the way that it makes me feel, I don't think that I would have recovered.
No.
Emotionally.
That's brutal.
From that. It would have been, I don't think I'm here now.
No.
Go into college that day.
That's your canon event. That's your camera.
Yeah. That was the beginning. That could have been the beginning of my villain.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? The abuse I got on that day turns me into the Lex Luthor of my timeline. You know what I mean?
But with an afro instead of being
and an even longer emo fringe.
Only the tips colored green.
It gets worse.
The straightened hair or of the whole fro?
Just the straightened hair. Black eyeliner, fishnet shirt. I now need a character art of this. I need someone to make Jasper.
KP, don't put that on the beautiful.
The power of
Jasper William Gothright.
That's what we need. Jeez. Well, thank all that is high and mighty that we're not here to talk about me today, because I don't think I can bear much more of this. We are, in fact, here to talk about you, KP, and very excited to have you on the show. Thank you for giving us your time. We got to hang out recently at Big Bad Con, which was a ton of fun.
Second year in a row,
baby. Yeah. It'll be three, because there's no way they're gonna have to, they're gonna have to lock me up to stop me from going again.
Absolutely.
But before we, we can talk about all of that shortly, but we'd love to just tell the listeners what it was that started you down the nerdy journey. The kind of origin story for a young KP? I'm assuming with full beard.
No.
Because I kind of really can't picture you without a beard. You're one of those friends where I'm like, I can't physically, your chin is the shape of your beard in my head.
Can I just say,
you came out bearded.
I came into this world bearded.
Yeah, it took a long time to wash out the beard after you were first born.
what did young bearded KP get into as their first venture?
Oh my god. I mean, where do I even start? I feel like the term nerdy can be as broad and or as specific as we want it to be, right? And
Absolutely.
I think for me, being nerdy, what is nerdiness? Is just a passion for something that you really love and you follow through and you do all as much as you can to learn about it and embody it and have that as a point of conversation with friends. So for me, I think I can pick possibly two points in my life that I can think of that could be an example of that. First one, when I was still in India, living in India, I think I was around seven, is when I got, someone handed me a book of The Adventures of Tintin. I don't know if you guys ever read that comic series or know about it.
I've read a bit.
Yeah, I know of it, but I've not read it. Yeah.
I'm blanking the author's name. He's some French guy. It starts with an H. Herbs something. I don't forget. I think he's French, or maybe he was like Dutch something. Somewhere there.
It's Dutch. Yeah. I think it's like, it's some kind of European.
He spoke French. That's all I know.
I'll find it out whilst you carry on with the...
But I think I just fell head over heel. I think that was the point where I fell in love with reading as well. And I think I became a nerd of reading books and reading about adventures and story and wanting to know more and tell stories and seeing this guy go on all of these different adventures. It was my first exposure to the world, right? Because me living in India, no real concept about what the rest of the world is like. Hell, no real concept about what the rest of India is like, right? And so to have this window, this access, without even leaving my own home, to learn about other cultures, to learn about these other countries. Because I think the first ever book I got was when he was adventuring in the United States. And I was just like, mind you, I bet you anything, culturally now, there's a lot of things in there that are absolutely inaccurate and probably problematic. But even to this day, I think it mostly
holds honestly up. I think, you know, we talk about a lot on the show. I think we just have to take a lot of stuff with a pinch of salt. Yeah. Otherwise, we just can't enjoy anything that we used to like.
Exactly, like, right?
Yeah. You know what I mean? It's like even stuff that's coming out now, it'll probably be like, oh, yeah, yikes, you know, in 10 years' time. So I think there's like an agreed blanket statement of like, we know, but this was the stuff that, you know, this is how we got it.
Exactly. But I think the positive of that came, it just opened my world up completely, right? And I became an avid reader after that. I became an avid, a passionate, or someone who would love to travel and experience the world and see as it is. And I think that kind of fed into my all of my other artistic ventures, right? Be it photography, be it on TTRPG shows and performances. It was all about going on adventures and telling stories. And really exploring this world together and learning new things. And so I think that really was the catalyst that propelled me in that direction. And if you wanted me to go talk about the moment that I became your typical conventional nerd, if I can add the term weeb to it, was literally, I think, the first day I landed in the United States, or the second day. It was the night we landed, and the next day I got on Cartoon Network, and the first thing that was on was Toonami, and the first show that was on was Sailor Moon, and followed that by Dragon Ball Z, and those two, it was a great, and funny enough, I loved the episode of Sailor Moon more than I did the episode of Dragon Ball Z. I will say I was shamed out of watching Sailor Moon, so I'm on a vendetta to one day sit down and properly watch it, because, you know, being a young boy with other boys as friends, they're like, oh, you watch Sailor Moon? That's a girl's show. I'm like, well, it's so cool, though. And they're like, no, you can't watch it. And so I ended up becoming a Dragon Ball Z fan, because that's what all my friends were a fan of. I still love that show, but I think I would have been a Sailor Moon kid if I was given the opportunity to just explore it on my own. That was start of Weeb KP. That was when I really fell into animation and anime and all of that stuff. So that was fantastic. And man, yeah, that, and then just things escalated and snowballed into everything else that you see today.
Yeah.
A hot mess.
Anime was like your gateway drug into nerdery.
Oh my God. Yeah. Oh yeah.
I'm curious.
Yeah. I did want to ask before you jump in, Jasper, I did want to ask, you mentioned it depends on like how you look at what being a nerd is and how that can be a kind of a broad definition or a broad concept, especially these days.
Yeah.
How would you define the term nerd? Like, what is a nerd to you, KP?
Yeah. It's similar to like I was saying earlier, that it's just something, if you have something that you're passionate about, if you have something that you enjoy, that you love talking about, that you love experiencing, that you go out of your way to experience over and over again, and wanting to just be in that space and have other people in that space around you to experience it with you, I think that's just a nerddom on its own, right? You can be a football nerd. Mm. You could be a sports nerd. You could be a music nerd, and so on and so forth. It's really just, what is your passion and That is exactly. It's like, what is your passion? What are you passionate about, right? I think that's where that nerddom comes in, that geekdom comes in. I think when you have it, I feel like when you start having that sort of perspective about that term, it feels much more healthy, because up till that point, everybody seems like, oh, you're only a nerd if you do something very eccentric or pursue something that is, you know, not something that is accepted by society or non-mainstream, right? Which I don't think is the case. I think, you know,
I feel like maybe I might even say that, like, maybe geek for me maybe still has like a little bit of that, like, where I'd say like, oh, some of the things I would say are like geeky because I feel like they're slightly less mainstream interests that I have. You know what I mean? But I think the great thing though for me is just that, like, neither of those words have the same connotation that they had back when I was when we were growing up. You know, both of those words would be seen as like, you know, not like negative per se, but they were kind of a bit like, oh right, yeah, you're a nerd or you're a geek, okay, what, you know what I mean? Whereas now I feel like I truly can't think of anyone in my life I would say isn't a nerd or isn't a geek, you know, about something. Which is, I think, maybe, you know, also with the invention of like things like social media and everything, I feel like, you know, we're it's way more, the things that we are passionate about and that we love are way more accessible to us.
Absolutely.
You know, they're at our fingertips. So it's easier for us to geek out or nerd out about our favorite, you know, our given subjects or whatever.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think it's more about...
No, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I think it's more about, it's less about what you're into and more about how you're into it. Yeah. I think that I would say,
exactly.
That it's like the passion and the and the way that you engage with it more than just, oh, you liked superheroes.
Exactly. Like, you talk to any sports guy who's super into any sort of sport, and you just, like, the moment you mention...
Mega nerdy.
Exactly. The moment you mention that term, a term from whatever their favorite sport is, and if they suddenly go on a giant diatribe of, oh, you know, this, and this, and this player, and that player, and this team, and their scores, and their statistics, and you're just like... That's a nerd. There's that nerd.
It's so fun. I had the other day, this is a slight tangent, but the other day I had the reverse of nearly every other of a very specific scenario, which I'd only ever had the other way recently, which was that I was recently having a conversation with someone. It was like a business meeting, having a conversation with them about TTRPG and stuff, and, like, you know, talking about actual play and all of this kind of stuff, until one of us made a tangential reference to a football, and there was like a glint in both our eyes of just like, oh shit. You're a football, are you? And then we realized that we were the same team, and it was like, oh well, okay, cool, we're now best friends, that's great. But it was a very, like, it was like, but I've had that exact thing where I've been like, you know, just like hanging out with someone, and then, you know, someone will be like, oh, you know, I'll cast prestidigitation or something, and I'm like, oh, sorry, you said what now? You know what I mean? It's like, you know, they make the kind of a throwaway comment, and you're like, oh, there it is.
Yeah,
that's you're one of mine. You're one of mine.
Yeah, they're trying to like throw it out there and see if you'll get it.
Yeah, true. That's what I mean. I think that it was quite fun to then. I was like, oh, I had it the other way around. But I think it goes to proving your point, though, that kind of all of these things can house, you know, nerddom and everything like that.
I think the only distinction I ever even found between, and this might be just my own, between nerddom and geekdom is nerddom always tended to me in my brain something that's more academics side of things, and then geekdom was much more like artistic and, like, you know, more pop culture sort of a stuff. And that was kind of in my mind the only distinction I ever found. But now both of them have become so interchangeable that it doesn't matter in the end. I think everybody understands when you say, oh, he's a nerd about comic books. Oh, okay. I get it. You know, I feel like people just don't care.
This HeadGum Podcast is brought to you by Aura Frames.
That is right.
From grandmothers to new mothers, aunts, even the friends of your life, every mom loves an Aura Frame.
Holy shit, even aunts?
Yes, especially aunts.
Oh, well.
Because it was named the best digital photo frame by Wirecutter and selected as one of Oprah's favorite things. I mean, these Aura Frames are guaranteed to bring joy to moms of all ages.
I believe it.
You have an Aura Frame, don't you?
Yes, I actually more than believe it. I know it. I've got one for my mom, my mother-in-law, my grandmother-in-law.
And dare I say, your aunt?
And dare you say, my aunt and my aunt-in-law. Everyone's got one. Everyone loves them.
I mean, Mother's Day is right around the corner, and there's no better gift than a digital photo frame. You give them the frame. It's got preloaded pictures in there. And you know what? You can update it with an app. So every time you take a new picture of a sweet little person or place or thing in your life, it gets automatically sent to that frame.
Exactly.
And right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. Holy smokes.
Excellent deal.
Yeah, that's AuraFrames.com. You use the code HEADGUM at checkout to save.
HEADGUM. Nice.
Yes. HeadGum. It's easy to set up. It's loved by everybody, including Oprah, including your aunt. Mm-hmm. So do check them out. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code HeadGum at checkout to save.
Damn right.
And terms and conditions apply, of course.
Of course.
Thanks again to Aura.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
I think I feel like as well, like the words, because it's become so much more like socially acceptable to be either of those things. I feel like the distinction feels like less important to draw than maybe it once did. But also just, you know, what an exciting and amazing time. Like, I don't think that, you know, a younger me would have ever envisaged a, you know, future or a scenario like this where, you know, I wouldn't have to try and actively convince my friends to go and watch a superhero movie. Like, you know, like, it, like that, that still blows my mind. I still remember going to watch the first Avengers movie and being like, and like all of my mates, like, you know, both my nerdy friends, my sports friends, my, you know, everyone was just like, yeah, sweet. When are we going? And I was like, this is great. Crazy. I had a 25 point, like, you know, PowerPoint slides to show you as to why we should go and watch this movie, and, you know, and it's like,
wasted
I don't
time.
Need any of that. Yeah, truly, but glad to have wasted my time, I guess. I love that. So one of the things that we always find kind of fascinating, and I think is always really cool for, you know, people listening at home to hear, is like, how did you you know, how did it first come about making any kind of transition into working within this industry, you know, professionally, semi-professionally, you know, to whatever extent that you have been in the past and obviously, you know, are doing now? Like, how was that transition for you? And because I think it feels like most of the people we've asked, and Jeremy, I don't know if you could probably attest to this, I feel like it's been it's very different for like everyone involved, right? It's like the journey, that beginning, you know, the kind of origin story of like, oh, my friend called me and was like, oh, do you want to be in this thing called an actual play? And I'm like, I don't know what an actual play, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like it's very different for a lot of people, so I'd love to hear what it is for you.
I mean, honestly, like, it's so funny that first and foremost, you know, I'm fairly new to the space, fairly new comparatively to a lot of folks. My first exposure.
I mean, comparatively, we're all new.
Right, you know, right. Like, I mean, in the sense of like,
there is like, there's some full blown wizards. I've seen some full blown real life white dudes with like
beards,
long white beards, you know, who I'm like, okay, well, you've been here forever. Yeah.
So, no, it's just like,
we're all pretty new.
I started my first game of D&D. Happened in 2019. First time I'd ever played. I didn't even know what it was about, and I don't know why I even wanted to get into it. One of my friends was like, hey, we're gonna play this game. Up till that point, you know, the typical, oh, D&D is for super weird people who are kind of a little out there and not socially, you know, there. And so like this weird stigma came about it, right? And I drank that Kool-Aid for a bit until I was like, you know what? That's stupid. I want to try this out. Why? You know, this seems like something that's super fun. One of my friends invited me to a game, and first game, I was hooked. I fell in love with it. And that started me on my, like, it was like mid to late 2019, I want to say. No, 2018. Sorry. End of 2018 was when I played my first game. Of D&D, I got so hooked that when that team, that group got disbanded within like 5 sessions, I was like, well, I still want my fix. I still want to keep playing this. So I would go to like Adventure League all over the weekend to play it. And then right around then is when, just to learn more about what TTRPG and D&D was about, I started listening to podcasts or you know, watching live play shows. That was what I learned about. Oh, people do this as an actual performative art for other people. Mm-hmm. And so I got into Critical Role. And so that kind of gave me that exposure.
I never heard of them.
No, right. They, they're a small time, yes, you know, they just kind of started a few years ago, but you know, hey, people seem to like it. Cool. It's pretty interesting.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry, say the name again.
Crap, what was it? Critical Role. That was it. Critical.
Oh, okay. Like when you roll an actual 20.
Yeah, it's very clever. Yeah, they were very play on words.
Yeah. So is it like ROLL?
I'm surprised no one took that.
Yeah. No, I don't think. I think it's ROLE.
Oh, it's a pun.
It's a pun. But, you know, it's like they're playing a role game. It's fun. Yeah. Oh, my God. Matt's going to kill me.
But, sorry, Matt, who? We actually had Matt on our show one time.
Just some guy. Just some dude.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, so, probably different than the one that we had.
Probably.
Probably.
They're all the same. Oh, man. Yeah. So, like, that made me go, you know, as a photographer, I've always been on the other side of the camera, right? I'm the one taking the photos. Mm. I'm the one doing the videos and stuff. So I never imagined myself, despite being a performative soul, like, I enjoyed being on stage. Like, I've done some performance on the stage when I was younger. I never had the opportunity to pursue that beyond that, right? Always went more of a technical field most of my life. And then right around then, because of Critical Role, a lot of my photography started being about Critical Role. I was able to work with cosplayers who did that sort of stuff. And I think that kind of all snowballed into meeting other people in the TTRPG space. And out of the blue, if you guys know Sailor Austin, I love her so much. And it was either Sailor or our DM, bless her soul. One of them, Sarah, invited me. He's like, "Hey, it seems like you're very into this, and you seem like a fun guy. Would you like to be a part of an actual play?" I'm like, "Okay. If you'll have me, sure." And it was me. It was Sailor Austin, Wasa Bote, who lives in Australia, our player, our DM, Sarah and Michelle. And I don't think they're on anymore, but Atomic Firebird, all of us started a game of Bubblegum Shoe. It's essentially like, think Stranger Things, but set in the 90s. And a lot of those 90 vibes. And we had a blast. I really enjoyed it. And that just became like my drug. Immediately, I was like, this is amazing. I really enjoy this. Oh, my freaking God. And that snowballed into, you know, then I think my first long-term campaign I was invited to was on Made Gaming's channel for a game called Coriolis. Our show is called Void. Game was Coriolis. Think Arabian Nights, but set in space. Sprinkling a little bit of Mass Effect in there, and that's our game. And oh my God, that was so much fun. And so that just started fueling this need and want and craving to be a performer that I've always had, that kind of I felt like was being suppressed, that I didn't even know I had this level of passion for. And that just exploded out. And I've just been very lucky in that I've had amazing people around me continue to give me opportunities to be a part of their story and tell these tales to other people. So that's me.
I think, I think it's so wonderful. I think the thing that I found so like intoxicating when we first got into space, and honestly still even now, is like getting the accessibility to tell such a wide range of stories. Exactly. You know, like you were saying, all those different you know, influences and ideas kind of rolled into one to tell like this kind of beautiful, unique thing. It's just like, you just don't get that, you know. You know, myself and Jeremy, we're both from like theater backgrounds, and it's, you know, if you're kind of working constantly, you maybe do 2-3 shows a year. Like that's kind of like just because of how long, you know, if you're doing a professional theater show, like how long they take from start to finish. And you guess you could probably do some smaller ones, but even then you're probably gonna end up doing a lot of plays that have already been done, or you know. And so like to come into a world where, you know, the reward in this space is the freshness, is the newness, is the something exciting, something that people have never seen before, and like not having the same constraints of like, you know, budgetary constraints or whatever to kind of pull, you know, whatever
or resources to try and tell a story at all. Like the genres you can cover. You could cover a whole range in TTRPGs. In theater, you're kind of limited, to be honest. Unless you're doing a bunch of puppets.
You
stuff.
Know, like that's what I mean. And like, you know, like sci-fi gets hard, you know, big monster stuff gets hard. Yeah. You know, it's like it's
there's a distinct there's a lack lot of things. Of sci-fi theater.
Yeah, it's crazy. Do you know what? I actually, this is a fun little load up. I did my my big kind of devised piece at the end of drama school was a solo piece in which I basically did like the Matthew McConaughey monologue from Interstellar. Wait, this is way before Interstellar, bear in mind. It was just basically like I was this dude on a spaceship that had been cut adrift and was slowly running out of fuel. And it was just me doing like diary entries from like, different points on the ship and everything like that. But I remember being like, yeah, this is weird. There really is like no other sci-fi theater.
It's hard.
Like,
yeah.
So I think I did it pretty much out of like, I just want to see if this would work and if people would enjoy this.
Yeah,
I say it's hard, but honestly, we're pulling it off.
I don't think
it's not. Like, we're pulling it off in front of a computer screen and making people believe we're a sci-fi show, let alone having even a decent budget. I feel like you could pull off something very believable and very beautiful. Mm.
You need to basically take out most of the stuff that people like about sci-fi movies and get down to like the core of like there's world building and dialogue and character.
Exactly.
We are not doing a bunch of wild effects.
Exactly.
Because we literally can't.
Exactly. And that, I think that really provides an opportunity to tell a different sort of a story and venture like we have to into different fields about, you know, essentially being, what does it mean to be human, but in space? Like, what does it mean to be an explorer of space and meet and do all these sort of wild things that, you know, we're obviously never going to experience in our lifetime. I hope so.
We can. Yeah. We'll see. One of my teachers at drama school actually wrote and produced a play for the Vault Festival. Mm. I think it was called like 2:53 a.m. or something like that. Mm. The a.m. standing for after man. And the premise was that all men had died. And like the all of the characters were women who were on a ship heading to a planet that they thought might have men on it because the women were sad. Aww. Because initially they were like, hey, this is great. But then people were like, we actually did like men, though. Like, men were cool. Like, not all of them, but, like, a lot of them. Like,
the main character's
like, I had a brother, and he was great. Like, I loved men. Wait a minute. And so they were flying to another planet to try and find men and be like, can we use your men, please? And just work them into our species? But it was, like, a feminist piece about, like, the role of men outside of just, like, traditional masculinity. Mm. But just, like, I think for some people it can feel like men are devalued. Mm-hmm. I think for some men, at least, they can be like, well, you're saying you don't need us. And people will be like, we don't need you. And the play was like, well, but they're still people. And like, they're good people, a lot of them. So we miss them.
I think it's a great, that sounds like such a fun way to help kind of almost like refresh the definition of masculinity. It's kind of like, feels like that kind of an approach of if, suddenly we lost all men and we had to rebuild.
Honestly, I think it would be kind of helpful if we could just hit a reset button on masculinity. You know what I mean? I would be pretty down for that, I think. Like, if we could just reset the definition of that like wholesale and just like, you know, just remove the Tates of the world. You know what I mean? I think that would be great. I think that would be really positive. You know?
And I wanted to maybe go back and ask you guys this. Like, I feel like we're all kind of as uniquely came into the space in, or maybe got to this point later on after a while, where for me, especially as I experienced these worlds and these stories that I was telling, it started becoming a great way to reconnect to my own culture that I felt like I've lost all this time and not be shameful of it. 'Cause, you know, growing up as an immigrant in the United States, there was a period in my life where I, you know, was ashamed of my heritage. I didn't want anything to do with it because it was bringing me a lot of pain. People were, you know, I was getting ridiculed for a lot of the practices and things we do, the food that I was eating that my parents would send to, like my mom would send to school with me. And so getting the opportunity to use these new worlds to then start exploring those aspects of yourself that you were ashamed of, but now can reconnect with, right? Like the entire first, like my first experience of D&D when I first played it was a very typical Western fantasy style. Oh, I'm a dark elf, and that's all it is, right? Because that was all I was ever exposed to, and that's always what I thought I was limited to, you know, that type of storytelling when I first played, which is a great training wheels to start off on. But then when I got the opportunity to do my first actual play, and I wanted to go, like, they asked me, like, what is the story you want to tell? What is the character? Like, who are you trying to embody, and what is their story? It really opened up my mind to go, oh, well, on top of wanting to tell a story, I, you know, obviously this is also a performative piece. How can I set myself apart? What do I bring to the table that is unique about me? And that was when my first character was literally me from high school, but refreshed in a way of, well, what would have happened if I actually had a good high school experience? What it would be KP, who had a great high school experience and was actually comfortable with himself and his culture? How would that have turned out? Yeah. And that wasn't that was such a cathartic experience.
I was just going to say,
and that just carried over into every other form of storytelling that I've done since then, where I was just like, I need everything I do now needs to touch upon who I am from both sides of the aisle, right? From both my cultural aspects here in the United States, as well as my cultural aspects from India and the experiences of both. And there's nothing shameful of either of them. It's just now I get this opportunity to really explore one side that I kind of kept in the dark until now. And almost, it's funny enough, everything I do, I kind of sometimes end up doing out of spite. where I'm just like, no, screw this. I am going to do this despite people saying I shouldn't or cannot do it, right? And I feel like almost all of my creative ventures started out due to spite, but it turned out great in the end. So there you go. Spite's a fantastic energy sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, absolutely. And I mean, you know, I was just going to say that one of the big, you know, I've said this a few times, I think, but one of the big inspirations for me starting this was just like, I wanted to be more in touch with, you know, my heritage, and I wanted to feel like a bigger connection, and I wanted to talk to other people of color who had similar experiences to me. So I could kind of, you know, start to piece together a little bit, like, you know, what other parts of my culture is, you know, alike, and be able to kind of connect them, like you said, in a way that doesn't make me feel like ashamed or awkward or, you know, whatever. Like, I can embrace that part of me that, you know. And it was why, you know, and originally when we had Unati on the show, you know, I learned so much about myself, you know, through Unati, because Unati is from, you know, I think literally like very close to the Zimbabwean border, which is my family's from southern Zimbabwe. And so, like, you know, it, like, and but I don't have much contact with that side of my family, so I've never really had the opportunity to talk about those things. And, you know, getting to like explore that culture and have contact in that way was really, really meaningful for me. And I definitely think it's enabled me to be, you know, a more kind of like, yeah, just more like open, you know, to it, and being able to embrace that, and not just my own, but also other people's cultures, because, you know, I feel like I'm just generally like, man, I want to play in a like freaking Indonesian setting, or, you know what I mean? Like, I want to play in like a, you know, just because it's like, I you know, the getting to embrace and enjoy the kind of richness of other cultures, I think is honestly like, yeah, it's what I, for me, takes, you know, fantasy and role playing and everything from like, you know, an incredible, deep and meaningful level to like a, you know, semi-transcendent level, where you're like, wow, I'm really getting to escape into a world that I just have never visualized before. I've never come into contact before. And I think that's a really, really valuable experience for me personally.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think for me, it's a similar thing where the opportunities to explore different aspects of yourself or different ideas, that you like, it's the opportunity to flex a creative muscle that you rarely get to flex to the same extent in other forms of performance. Like in acting, you can be very creative, but there's usually a limit.
Yeah.
Like, you still usually have to say what they wrote, and stand where they told you to stand and wear what they told you to wear, and play the character at least somewhat like they wanted you to. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot less creative expression, I feel like, with something like that. But with this, it's like, yo, I can be whatever I want. And yeah. if that is like exploring an aspect of myself that I don't really get to explore in my everyday life, or even exploring something that I've never experienced at all and saying like, mm-hmm. oh, how do my experiences map onto this situation? Like, what is it like to imagine that I am this person in this situation at this time? And like you all were saying, also experiencing fiction that is created out of cultures, because I feel yeah. like learning the fiction of a culture can often tell you quite a lot about the culture. Mm. In some ways, things that you wouldn't learn necessarily by just visiting the place or learning about the history of the place. Like I feel like the fiction that people would create tells you a lot about their actual culture and what the actual people are like.
Yeah,
I mean, because this yes, what we absolutely. Do harkens back to the very. A very core of humanity, I think, right? Of storytelling mm. that has been a part of our society from when society started forming, where we would get around fires and we would have elders tell stories to us about gods, about morals, about how we should be and our connection to Earth and the connection to the cosmos. And that is such an integral part of humanity. And it's what sets us apart, right? It's what sets us apart from other creatures on this earth. And so having that opportunity to continuously have to do that, I think we lost those ways in our modern society. And we don't get an opportunity to do much of that nowadays, of having people gather around to tell stories together. And so to be able to do that, I think that's what's so powerful about being able to be in this TTRPG space and do what we do, not even in front of the camera, but just a group of friends coming together and telling these stories is so transformative. Mm-hmm.
I definitely think it's one of the reasons why I love TTRPGs as much as I do. And I think that they're so kind of like, honestly important mm-hmm. is because I think that we've kind of monopolized the ability to tell stories nowadays, because I think people think that like, oh, in order to tell stories, you have to be on like a big West End stage, or you have to be, you know, in the movies, mm-hmm. or you have to, mm-hmm. do you know what I mean? But it's like, no, the right to tell stories is everyone.
Yeah.
It's, and you reading a book to your kid, you putting on a play with your kid, telling your grandma's story, a slightly embellished version of something that happens to you during the day. All of those things are like intrinsic part of the sort of storytelling, mm-hmm. you know, journey. But, you know, you're allowed to go deeper than those yeah. things. You know, you're allowed to dig deeper and find something a bit more rich. And I think that you definitely get the opportunity to with TTRPGs. And one of the reasons why I love them.
Yeah.
Sure.
And KP, it harkens back to what you were saying at the beginning of the episode about how when you read Tintin, mm-hmm. it was like you were being transported. Like that, it's that same idea. Like yeah. there, you yeah. are being transported to a world that you didn't know existed, that you've never really had contact with before. And suddenly your mind is like able to explore things,
expanding.
And experiencing things.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that harkens back to like the core of what a lot of storytelling, like how storytelling really works.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, we've done good work here today.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Just so lovely. Like, well done. Look at us. Look at us.
So funny
storytelling. Yeah. I absolutely love it. And I think a beautiful way for us to begin to wrap this episode up. But before we go, KP, there is something very important that we always ask all of our guests, which is that we ask them for a tale from the table. Ooh. So basically, this can be a story from a table. Oh. And the only criteria is that it is memorable in some way. It can be very funny, very sad, very emotional, you know, whatever it is, but just something that stands out from you from either a past game that you've played in or like a stream or something, whatever you want.
Jeez. I mean, every table has been so special. And I'm not trying to be, you know, what's the word, laissez-faire with this. It's like every table I've been in, I've learned something new about myself, knew about other people and how to connect with folks. And every single one has changed me for the better, I feel, which is fantastic. And I think that's such a huge privilege that I don't know if other people can say they have. But I personally have had that opportunity that any table that I've sat with, I've been lucky to be around people who are just fantastic in their own rights, at least at the time. How and what happens afterwards, I'm not in control of. But while we're sitting at that table and learning and getting this opportunity to tell all these stories has been so impactful. So I would say, though, the one that kind of sticks out to me is, as and this goes back to, you know, how you know I approach my characters and storytelling affects me, because I approach it as a way of exploring myself and exploring my culture, that every choice that I make as my character is kind of a what if moment for me of, what if KP was in this situation? How would he react? Would he be able to do something different? And it kind of teaches me more about myself and how I can explore the world. And one character that really sticks out to me is a character named Shurvi. I got the opportunity to play her a couple of one-shot episodes on, now they're called Elder Eye Entertainment. Used to be they were called D4 RPG. Fantastic crew, great storytelling. And they invited me last year starting as guest on the show. And I created this character named Shurvi, which she was a changeling bard. And her entire premise was that she was found by a traveling companion of bards, abandoned in as a young changeling in one of the dungeons that they were in. They took her in, and these five mothers that she had raised her to essentially be a, you know, traveling bard with them. And while they traveled, they did adventures and stuff. And in one adventure, they had a mishap where the family got chucked across the multiverse and she got left behind. And now she's on this journey trying to go across the multiverse to find her you know, her family. And what I loved about her is that this was a version of KP that's afraid. This is a version of KP that is uncertain, that has no confidence. But despite being in that situation of not knowing my own strength, not knowing what I'm capable of, doubting what I am and what I can do, and not knowing that if I will ever even succeed, yet even despite having those feelings, still going forward, still tackling things head on, and still moving on. And it was so funny. The phrase came about so naturally once I got into this mindset. I never like practiced it, never intended it, never wrote it down, but her motto became one more step, one more step. It was this moment where she felt like the world was overwhelming. There was nothing she can do. And she felt rooted to the ground. And like the goal seems either so far away or just non-existent. And she has no idea where to even go. She's so lost. And this mantra that her parents gave her suddenly comes up and she goes, one more step. And just taking that first step, and then going one more step, and then just keep on just it's not even about how many steps have I taken, how far can I go. It's, let me just take that one more step going forward, and that will give me a little more courage to take one more step going forward. And then before you know it, you're well ahead from where you were before. And so, like I said, I never practiced that. And she then taught that to me. That character taught it to me. So now in real life, any moment where I feel similarly, where I feel like I'm Shurvi right now, okay, take a deep breath, one more step, and just going forward a little bit. And it just transformed how I approach things so many ways.
Yeah, I think it's so beautiful when you can allow your characters and your you know, your experiences to kind of like, you know, just like to relive them you know, through the game. And I think that TTRPGs are such a good way of doing that you know, for us, and like, yeah, like you said, teaching these things that were like definitely in there the whole time, we just weren't listening to them. I think that's lovely. And you know, if anyone out there is feeling like Shurvi right now, and it's just one more step, that's all it is, one more step, you can do it. Absolutely love that. KP, thank you so much for giving up your time and coming on the show today.
Thank you for
really appreciate having you here. Where can people find you on the internet if they haven't heard of you?
I mean,
crazy.
Seriously, thank you guys so much. And if you're ever interested in anything that I do, you can find me pretty much any of the socials as KP11 Studios. I'm primarily, for better or worse, primarily still stuck on Twitter. I mean, refuse to call it the other name.
We don't call it. We don't refer to the other name because it's a stupid. It's just a letter.
Exactly.
It's stupid.
I'm on that. I'm on Instagram. I'm on all the spaces as KP11 Studios. I do photography, I do TTRPGs, I do cultural consultation. I just love also sharing about my culture and other people's culture, and hopefully using that as a medium for people to be inspired for new things and new forms of storytelling and new ideas. So if you're ever interested in that, if you ever want to share your ideas, your stories, I would always love to hear it. It inspires me so much, and it actually gives me energy to know that there's so many diverse people out there telling their things. You guys got it. I'm excited.
Incredible. Thank you so much. Jeremy Cobb, where can people find you on the internet?
Yeah, you all know. It's Jeremy Cobb.
That's the quickest plugs ever.
Yeah, you know. Actually, I will say the other day, I was speaking... it was for practical purposes. I don't think I've ever done it before. I Googled myself.
Ooh.
And the top thing that comes up is my Twitter.
You haven't done that before?
No. I did like a long time ago. I think I did when I was like a teenager or like in my early 20s or something. Mm. But it's been a long time.
I Google you probably more than you Google you then. Because I Google you all the time. I'm just like,
what kind of shenanigans has he been up to now?
When I was typing in Jeremy Cobb, the autocomplete said feet. Was that you, Jasper? Was that?
Hey, I refuse to comment. I refuse to comment this time.
No, but I'm
hearing from my lawyer.
But yeah, I discovered the first thing that comes up is my Twitter when I Google Jeremy Cobb. So I guess Google Jeremy Cobb and you'll find me on Twitter.
Mm.
There you go.
I
feel like that just nice. You could skip a step and just Google. Search on Twitter. Now that you said it,
it's too late.
Let's make it easy.
It's probably more confusing on Twitter. Okay. I think if you search on Twitter, it's probably way more Jeremy Cobb.
That's fair.
Whereas
that's
if you just some Google Jeremy Cobb, there. It's my Twitter specifically. Yeah,
see, that's smart. That's smart.
Nice. I have been Jess William Cartwright. You can find me at JW_Cartwright. You can check me out on the current series of Dimension 20, playing Thorn Vale in Burrow's End. Please check out thank you, KP. Please check out the Rotating Heroes podcast as well. This is a show that I'm doing with Zach Oyama. I will be taking over as DM from Arc 8, which by the time you're listening to this might already be out. Go and check out the brand new episodes. Very, very excited. We've recorded those. I'm in the edit at the moment and it's sounded peachy. Very excited for you to hear it. And if you've enjoyed this, the Three Black Halflings, you can find us at three. That's the number three Black Halflings, and you on all the social medias. And you can find us on Patreon, which is patreon.com/TB Halflings, where you get even more Three Black Halflings goodness in your life, including lots of bonus episodes and hangouts and exclusive votes, all kind of stuff. So go and check that out. But please check out KP's stuff. All the links will be in the description below, wherever you're listening to this. So it's like one click away to go and follow and like KP's work. And I think that's probably all for us this week. We will talk to you in the next one. The next week, just to be clear. That's what I was saying.
Time is a shy of folk.
Yeah, time is an absolute construct.
Yeah, time is a flat circle. You should do that as your next monologue, your McConaughey monologue.
Nice.
Yeah, time is a flat circle.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.